So it's good afternoon from the magical Isle of Vashon, and this is Captain Joe, and now I truly am in the captain's chair. I've been moved over into the captain's seat here on the bridge at Voice of Vashon, and I've got a couple of guests, of course, and we're going to talk about interesting things with interesting people. And so the first thing I have to bring up and to mention and to express some gratitude for is that after my broadcast last week, I have received a number of comments from my Coast Guard family. And along with one of those comments arrived electronically a very generous donation from one of you, one of my Coast Guard people, one of Captain Joe's people. And that person asked to remain anonymous, and I, of course, am going to honor that. But I am going to thank him and also to thank everybody on the Coast Guard channel who was so gracious and so generous and so kind with their comments, because it was those that motivated the Voice of Vashon to rescue me from Truman's hands and the 10-minute limit and give us our own half hour. So for those who have donated financially, those who have donated with their best wishes and regards, I am very grateful, and I thank you, and mahalo. A quick head report. I've made the rounds of the heads at this end of the island, and I'm listing the ones that we have, which are available for those island people who may find themselves in some sort of alimentary distress and who need to make a head call someplace, which was not planned. And so one of them is in the library, and another one is at the Ace Hardware Service Center, where Doug and Dennis were instrumental in our getting the flag back up at Vashon Community Care. Another one is at Vashon Bikes, and there is one in the Vashon Park District. And I have to comment here that the one in the Vashon Park District has a new sign on the door, and it says that this is an all-gender head. So I leave it to each to decide which one of those four heads, as well as the others that we have on our list, that we decide to use. But they are there, and each one of those is listed with the permission of the people who actually own it. If it's a business, they do not require that there be any purchase, but I hope that you will at least talk to the people that are manning the business, and if it is something that you need and would like to have, then it that you give them your custom. The other one is in Thriftway. And the one, the head in Thriftway, is all the way at the back of the store. You have to go all the way through the greeting card department, through the department that has organic vegetables. You have to go through the department that has the wilted and lettuce department to get all the way to the back where the head is. But there is one there in Thriftway, and one of the good things about Thriftway is that it is not only the island meeting place, but it is also the place where sometimes you meet people that you had not expected to meet. And so there have been some very interesting confrontations in the aisles of Thriftway, which nobody had planned on. So my guest today is Elaine, who is the executive director for the Vashon Park District. And Elaine is special to me for two reasons. The first one is that she is indeed the executive director for an organization of which I have been a family member for the 20 years that I have lived on the island. And the second one is that she is an artist and a performer of great skill in her own right. So, Elaine, what is, remind me, as my memory does not falter or fail, But you tell me the name of the group to which you belong.
I am a member of the Curvettes, Captain Joe. It's a three-part women singing group. We have a full band. We do things ranging from the Andrews Sisters, sort of the World War II era style songs, to contemporary pieces that we just really like ourselves. And we do what we call, we curve it up. So we kind of make it our own. And it's really fun. We're singing next at the Red Bike on November 1st at 8 o'clock. It's first Friday. So we're on the docket for the Red Bike thing. So everybody come. It'll
so for older hands here, the Red Bike used to be called Bishops.
That's right.
And it remains Bishops for me today. And the my other guest is also my trainer and teacher, as well as much loved friend, Captain Truman O'Brien. And Truman is here not only to make sure that I don't screw up the panel, but also to make sure that I don't use any of the seven words. By the way, Elaine, I have to ask you to not use any of those words either.
Thank you for the reminder.
Yes,
we had
a little training session on that before we
got started this morning.
The captain's language improvement program is in order here.
It is indeed. Yeah. But Truman also is not only another special friend, but he also is a former chair of the Board of Commissioners of the Vashon Park District.
Yep.
And before that was a longtime member. Mm-hmm. And so the three of us are going to have a talk, those three friends talking about something that's very important to all of us here on the Magical Island, that is the parks that we have. And I'm going to start with you, Truman, because I'd like to have a little bit of historical context and a little bit of a historical review of some of the things that have happened to us over the years that in which you were involved, and you were in the chair, I think, when I first started working with the Vashon Park District.
Well, the first thing is that the whole park district started because the old Nike missile site, Paradise, which is now Paradise Ridge Park, was being divested by the federal government. They tried to give it to King County, and King County Parks did not really want it. And so they said, well, the King County Parks came to the island and said, do you folks on the island like to have this? Well, there were several people who got together and said they did some research and discovered that they could start a park district. And so they did. And their first election, they elected five park commissioners. Ruth Anderson was one of the primary movers and shakers on that, that actually put the whole thing together. They started, they had no money, there was no levy, everything was done by volunteer labor. That was, I think, 1983, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And the first actual levy was 87. And I don't remember the dollar amount, but it was tiny, I can tell you there. I think the budget was about $60,000. I joined the board in 1994. And at that time, our total budget was about $90,000, and we had one part-time employee, and everything else was done by volunteer labor. One thing I wanted to point out that I think is really important, one of the very first things that happened when I became a park commissioner was the relationship between the land trust and the park district. The land trust came to us with the acquisition of Fern Cove. And in order for them to take ownership of it, it had to actually be owned by a government entity in order for them to get the money. So they came to us and said, how would you like to be the owner of Fern Cove? And if you do that, we can acquire this property and then we'll manage it for you. You won't have to do any of that. Well, we had to put together a management agreement, which changed the original idea, but that partnership started. The next piece of property that came up was for Fisher Pond. That was the same deal. The land trust put together the money, they put together the effort to get it, and the park district took ownership. That relationship, I think, is continuing, is it not, Elaine?
Absolutely. Yeah, they manage a number of our properties. Lost Lake is one, right. The Melita Creek properties. And yeah, they're very much a very valued partnership for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Elaine, would you explain the relationship between voting at all and then having voting in favor of passing the levy. Because I think a lot of people don't understand that in order for the levy to pass, there has to be a certain number of people that vote at all. And although the magical Isle of Vashon has a fair record of voting compared to the rest of King County, the rest of King County is not all that good. I almost said one of those words.
Yes, you did.
On that list.
Yeah.
And before Elaine answers this question, which I know that especially all of my off-island listeners are awaiting with barely concealed anticipation, I'm reminded that I am to make a disclaimer here, and the disclaimer is that everything that we talk about on this program from the captain's chair and anything that I say is indeed my own personal opinion, my own personal biases, my own personal prejudices, my own personal bigotries, of which all of us have some. And so those are mine. They don't belong to anybody else. And I welcome any challenges that anybody wants to send me a note. You can send me an email at CaptainJoe@CenturyTel.net. And I think maybe we can get me onto the Voice of Vashon email
list. We might be able to do that.
Yeah. And people can send things. But the thrust of all of this is that these are all mine and do not reflect, I hope that they might, but they do not reflect the official position of Voice of Vashon. And with that, Elaine, over to you.
Well, thank you.
I noticed you kind of dropping off there.
Snoring. That was a snore. Yeah. Not a snort, a snore. Well, kind of back to your question before the very long caveat part that you went into there. You asked me about the levy and encouraging getting out the vote. And I think you were alluding to numbers that must participate in the voting process in order to validate the levy. There's a formula, and I don't have that formula, the numbers specifically memorized, but it is generally, we go off of the last November general election as the starting point. And there were over 6,000 voters that participated in that vote. So of that, to validate the levy, we have to have at least a 40% voter turnout. And of that 40%, for the Vashon Park District levy, which is on this November ballot, it has to be 60% yes votes of that 40%. So, you know, that it's not just an easy 50-50. The April levy that we ran, you know, it failed because even though we had a 54% yes vote, it failed because we didn't meet that 60% threshold. So it's important for people to vote, period. It's just we have to have the numbers present just to validate the levy as a starting point.
Yeah, even if you got the 60 or 70%, if you don't get the 40% of the folks who voted in the last general election, it still is not validated.
That right? is correct, yeah. Now, I'm confident in a November election that we're going to get at least the number of voters out. So, you know, there's a lot on this ballot. It tends to be a pretty high turnout. So we're not too worried about the validation factor.
So one thing that all of us who live on the island are very much concerned about is that should this levy fail, that there are a number and maybe all of the programs and parks that we support with the levy would have to be stood down. So would you characterize that just a little bit, please?
Yeah, I think that that's probably the most important point about this levy, just as a starting point in terms of the talking points. 80% of our funding comes from a voter-approved levy. We have to come back to the voters every 4 to 6 years in order to have our levy renewed. It's not a new levy. It is a renewal levy. It's the renewal of our existing funds going forward. So, yeah, if this November election, if this ballot measure fails, we will have no choice but to close parks and facilities because we will not have funding for 2020.
And so where does the 20% come from?
Well, it comes from a variety of sources. It comes from user fees. It comes from the rental of the lodging facilities. Comes from grants. We have been very successful in obtaining grants, but grants are for capital projects. They are not for operations. So that 20% does come from a lot of different sources, but even from the user fee standpoint, you wouldn't have the 20% without the 80%. We do charge for athletic field use as an example, but rent a athletic field if it's not well maintained.
And I want to point out, this is what's called an M&O levy. It's a maintenance and operations budget item.
Correct.
It's not used for acquisition or any of those things. It's used to maintain the parks that we have and to continue the operation of those parks. And that includes employees and I guess it would include vehicles because that's part of the operations, but
sure. But
it's not acquisition. That's the thing that people need to know. And I think it's really important that we differentiate between King County Parks and Vashon Parks, because I know that the King County Parks just passed a levy. That is not Vashon Park District, and it's completely separate, and we really need to be aware of that, I think.
And we are our own taxing agency, as they are. We do not receive M&O, maintenance and operations money, from King County at all or from the state. That's a very, very important point to make.
So for Truman and Elaine, I have brought my ballot with me. And I have it sitting right in front of me. And the first thing that I notice is that at the top of the ballot, it says, remove this stub.
Oh, and you have not.
You notice that I have not.
No.
And the reason that I have not is that I am wondering if this falls into the same category as those tags that used to be attached to mattresses.
Which you could never take off.
Which if you took off, you were liable to a violation of some part of the United States Code. You could be prosecuted. You could be sent to Leavenworth. Military people go to Leavenworth.
But Captain Joe, I don't see any cops out there that are coming to arrest you because you haven't yet torn that stub off.
Well,
the day's not over.
That's true.
Doesn't that same rule apply to pillows as well?
That's
now,
right.
And yet, you know, when you put your pillowcase on, sometimes it's a little scratchy. I always remove that tag.
Oh, boy, don't admit that on the radio.
Well, there it is. It's out there.
glad I am that I brought that up. But what that does is it emphasizes the importance of, for everybody who listens to us, wherever you may live, even if you live in Stockholm. And we know that we have listeners in Stockholm.
That's right.
And if you live in Amsterdam, and we know that we have listeners in Amsterdam.
Yes.
That no matter where you live, and even if your ballot doesn't have that stub that you're supposed to remove, it is essential that each of us who are a citizen of a country which has the secret ballot, that great privilege which comes to us from so many centuries back, that you exercise that privilege and that you remove the stub, fill out your ballot, get it in on time. And I will mention this again when we meet again next week. But
right.
I'm asking Elaine and Truman to stay because I'm going to talk about some other things.
Oh, okay.
But I believe that each of them may well have something to say. I don't know why I believe that, except that I've been around both of them for a long time, and they've never been reluctant to have anything to say. So the next thing I'm going to talk about is the upcoming fur ball, which is Vashon Island Pet Protectors. And it is on the 26th of October on Saturday. The doors open at 16:30, 4:30 in the afternoon, Pacific Daylight Time. And it is at the open space. And this allows me to move into the recognition of a wonderful lady here on the island who died a few days ago. And her name was Barbara Drinkwater. And Barbara founded Vashon Island Pet Protectors. And Elaine, in our talking before we got started, was saying that she now has animals, pets, cats, that came from the from Vashon Island Pet Protectors, and probably Truman got a horse from them because he's always acquiring even more horses. So Barbara was one of the first people that I met here on the island, and that came about because not very long after we moved into our house down on Tahlequah, which is the south end of the magical Isle of Vashon, a cat showed up at the door and applied for a residency. He had his little sea bag, and he was he said, "I'd like to come in and live in this house. This looks like a pretty neat place to live." But we were not in the mood for acquiring any animals, and so I looked up in the telephone book, our little island telephone book, and discovered that there was an organization called Vashon Island Pet Protectors. So I called the telephone number because I wanted to know what to do with this cat. He clearly had moved in and had taken over one of the rooms and was not making any signs of ever leaving, and so I wanted to find out what to do with him. Did somebody take cats that were extra? So I called up, and Barbara answered the telephone, and I told her what my problem was, and she said, "Well, Captain Joe, you live on a rural road, and sometimes people will drive their pickup trucks along that road and open the door and toss a cat out. And so maybe that's what happened to you." And she said, "Here's what I'll tell you what we'll do." She said, "If you'll agree to foster that cat, I will work very diligently to find a home for that cat." Barbara lied. She did not do anything because she knew that as soon as we became accustomed to each other, and by this time, this cat, who by this time was named Leo, Leo by this time had unpacked his sea bag and stowed everything in his locker. Sure enough, he ended up becoming a member of the family. But what we did not know, and I never told Barbara, was that he had a buddy who had been traveling with him, and he was out in the bushes just waiting for the call. And sure enough, Semper Paratus blasted out over the property, over the peaceable kingdom, and Cecil came out of the woods, showed up at the door. Well, by this time, I knew that if I called Barbara, I knew exactly the answer I would get. "Captain Joe, if you will just foster that cat, we will find a home for it." Well, she never did, and bless her heart, that's how she conned countless numbers of people here on the island. So her memorial service is going to come pretty soon, and I hope to be able to go to that, and I hope to be able to talk about it.
I have a question for
you,
though. I got one. I just got texted a question, and that is that you have a new cat named Sailor, as I understand. And the question is, did that cat come from Vip, or was that a stray that just showed up?
It was neither. It's a bootleg. Yes, it is a bootleg. I have a friend who makes journeys back and forth between Colville and the magical Isle of Vashon. And on each return journey, she has this very large sport utility vehicle that has that sports a three-pointed star. And she on her return, she always brings back as many cats as she can find. She runs a string of Havaharts out there at Colville, and she's bringing them back. And this cat is an orange cat. And
That's my favorite.
I had just lost an orange cat. I had just had to put down my orange cat, whose sole mission in life was to protect me from all of the evils of the world. And I'd had to put her down. And so this was an orange cat. And this friend knew, she was in the tradition of Barbara Drinkwater. She knew that if she named this cat properly, that once I saw it,
you'd be hooked.
Right? I was hooked. Yes. Yeah. So that's exactly what happened. Mary and I went over one day, and Sailor sucked up, and I scooped him up, and he's now over. Yep. Now he's running
the show.
Yeah.
Lovely, Captain Cho.
It is.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know what?
That you had a cat. I had no idea that you had a cat.
Oh, my goodness. We've had...
And a rescued cat at that.
A rescue cat at that, yes. So thanks to Michelle, who I know is listening because she is one of my most, she and Scott are two of my most faithful listeners. So I'm going to pass on from that because I promised my Coast Guard people that I would recognize one of our Coast Guard heroes. And it happens that if he had lived, he would be 100 years old on the 11th of October. His name was Douglas Monroe, and that's spelled M-U-N-R-0. And he came from Clay Ellum, Washington. And he is buried in Clay Ellum, Washington. And his story is that when World War II broke out, he went into the Coast Guard because he knew then, as is true today, that we rescued people, and that's what he wanted to do. But instead, he became the, it was a signalman was his rating, but he became the coxswain of one of the landing craft at Guadalcanal. And he was taking in a group of landing craft, of which he was the lead boat, into loaded with Marines that were at the Guadalcanal invasion. And he was hit, and he was killed. And just before he died, the last thing that he said was, "Did they all get off?" He's the only non-Marine who is listed on the list of heroes in the Marine Corps Museum.
Wow.
And I'm reading here, it's called the Wall of Heroes of the National Museum of the Marine Corps. He is the only non-Marine who is listed on that.
Wow.
So he was 22. And that reminds us all of us who have served and all of those who are serving now and the young people that will come behind us and serve, it reminds us all that the price of freedom, it is not free.
That's for sure.
And so here's a young man who was in the, I've got his photograph right here. He's wearing a one of the traditional Coast Guard uniforms with the flap on the back. And his white hat is tilted at a jaunty angle.
I was just going to say, quite jaunting, isn't
it? Quite a jaunty young man. So with that, we are coming up close. I just got the two-finger signal from Captain O'Brien. And so I've got 1 minute here for our term for the day. And one of the terms that we frequently use in the Navy and in the Coast Guard is the binnacle list. The binnacle list is a list of all the people that are on the sick list, and it goes back to sailing ship days when the surgeon, who was the ship's doctor, would list all of the people who were not able to perform their duties because they were injured or ill. And it was written down on a list, and it was taken aft to the quarter deck, and it was hung right on the binnacle. And the binnacle is the stand that holds the compass. And that way the officer of the watch would be able to see when he would call his crew to sail stations who would not be there. And so the binnacle list was called that because it hung off the binnacle, and it remains called that today, that people who are on the sick list are on the binnacle list, and a number of my Coast Guard people, Captain Joe's people, are on the binnacle list today, and so we want to make sure that they're doing everything that they're supposed to do to get well and be ready to fall in for quarters for muster. And so I'm going to close by saying that every night at sea, I wrote night orders for the officer of the deck for the safety of the ship during the night. And I always close those with the statement that if you have any doubts about calling me, call me. So anyone out there who are one of Captain Joe's people, and I hope all of you are, if you have any doubts about calling me, call me. Thanks to Elaine. Thanks to Truman.
Thank you.